Welcome to Luxuries for Your Soul with Alexis Clutchian and Lauren Gault. Every episode is a look at life through the lens of luxury, whether it's the dismantling of belief systems, pursuing our passions, or standing in our truth. We approach each conversation with genuine curiosity of what it means to have a well-lived life. Today we are joined by Melissa Holgado and learn all about Red Hill, a historical federal-style home built in 1825 in central Virginia, situated on 40 acres in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Melissa and her family have big dreams for restoring Red Hill. With dignity and respect, they have begun transforming its somber energy into a place of respite from a busy life. But this is not your regular remodel. There was no running water, plumbing, or electricity, and it has sat untouched for many years. This is a project of love. Melissa acknowledges the privilege to own it and practice gratitude for its place in history and past guests. An Edgar Allan Poe tie-in, fingerprints found in handmade bricks, original mirrors on the wall, and a beautiful, poignant letter that still rings true today. There are lots of layers in this conversation. And it always makes you think about all of the details that make a house a home. Before Melissa joins us, please subscribe or follow the podcast and leave us your 5-star review. It's the best way to help us make an impact by growing our listenership and attracting new guests so you can continue receiving all the luxuries for your soul. Enjoy this episode with Melissa Holgado of Restoring Red Hill.
I'm really excited to have you here. I found you on Facebook. I don't even know how. And I was like, this is an amazing story. So I'm excited that this worked out.
Yeah, I love that it, you know, you never think that what you're doing is going to interest people. We had done a project, you know, our house in Atlanta, and we documented a little bit, but not a ton. And I had always wished that I had documented more. And this project is so much more weighty and important. And I knew for like our family and friends, it would be, there's just so much that's going on all the time. And I didn't want to constantly be like answering the questions of like, so how's it going? And do you have pictures? And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to put it on social media because our family, we're in different countries. We're in different parts of this country. It's all over. So, but yeah, so, and I've gotten a lot of following in this area, like in Virginia, which is nice because people will message me that are from the original Ellis family or, you know, that have seen the property or have a story and that I love to because it really helps with, you know, putting the pieces together and my research. So, yeah, it's been great.
Tell everyone what it is that you're doing exactly and the name of the project.
Our house is called Red Hill, not Patrick Henry's Red Hill. There's actually quite a few estates, old plantations that are called Red Hill in Virginia. You know, it's red clay soil here and it's hilly. So, you know, there's a Red Hill farm that's a working farm that I found. There's Patrick Henry's Red Hill, which is the most famous one. But I don't want to change the name because that's always been its name since the 1700s. So,
wow.
Yeah. So we are restoring a home that is a historic registered plantation house built in 1825. Obviously, the land has a lot more history that predates this 1825 house, but it has sat untouched. The last time any work was done on it would be probably very early 80s, but wow. Very minimal. From like the 60s to the 80s is very minimal work being done on it and not lived in. And the last time anyone's actually lived in this house was in the 1950s. So it's very much a time capsule and it has so much original work. And I have my master's degree in architecture and I have a love for existing structures. And I think it's really important that we save these structures. Not just, I think a lot of people talk about the history aspect, which is really important, but also from a environmental standpoint, the greenest building is the one that already exists. So we can talk about building these LEED certified green homes with solar panels on the roof and, you know, water collection systems and all, and that's great. But still, the greenest thing you can do is to not tear down and to buy an existing structure. So I'm a lot of my research in school was on that. I'm a big advocate for that. So yeah, so we found Red Hill. We're restoring it. Eventually, it will be our family home. We will live there full time.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not trying to, at this point in time, we don't have any plans on monetizing the house or property. It's really, you know, we were looking for a place for peace and quiet to raise our kids and to get out of the city and to slow down, although I don't think we know what that word slowing down means, but that's always the goal. It's always a goal. And so Red Hill was that for us. But when we bought it, it had no running water, no electricity. It's never had a plumbing system. Obviously, no kind of like temperature control or anything like that. So it's not moving ready.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people live there, right?
But well, people will be like, are you living there while you're working on it? And I'm like,
no,
absolutely not. Absolutely not. Great question. But no, we don't live there. But we're close by. We're close by.
How many bedrooms, bathrooms? Can you talk about the layout of the house a little bit?
Yes. So it's a federal style home. It's called a central plan. It's very, very traditional. It's easy to understand. When you walk in, there's a large central hall, and then you have four rooms basically on the corners. And on the main floor, I have been told in past times some of those rooms were used as bedrooms, but I don't count them as bedrooms. I think, I'm trying to think in the listing, they probably would have called it a four bedroom. There's four rooms upstairs. There's a basement, there's a main floor, and there's a second floor, and they're all exactly the same layout. There's a central hall. There are four rooms on the corners. So I would say the upstairs is where we will be having, you know, bedrooms and bathrooms. We will be putting a guest bedroom in the basement, hopefully. When we're done with it, it'll be a 5-bedroom, 3.5-bath is the plan.
Since it's a historical home, and talk about the challenges throughout the building process.
Oh, yeah. So I'll start off by saying that our house is listed, so it does have some protections to it. Now, anybody can, unfortunately, work to unlist their home, but I suggest not doing that. There's tax benefits for being listed. It does put a little bit of, you know, handcuffs on you on what you can and cannot do. And I'm taking it a step further and going through the tax credit process. So what that is for historic properties, and it doesn't even have to be a home. You know, it could be a commercial building. It could be a historic landscape that you're working on. And you can go through the process with the Department of Historic Resources for your state. Every state has this. And if your project is deemed, you know, historic, you can go through the process, and at the end, you know, you keep track of all your spending and all that. Eligible expenses, you get 25% back in tax credits at the end of your project. And for a project this size, that's a lot. It's even more handcuffs, right?
Yeah.
Everything has to be approved.
Even the colors, right? Exterior.
Well, exterior, definitely. Anything you do to the exterior. Interior, not so much. But I also have the ethos that kind of works with that. You know, I'm not trying to gut anything or take out original features. So I don't find it as cumbersome. There have been some things, you know, that we've gone back and forth on, like the roofing material and such, and the upstairs layout. You know, I'm going back and forth with them on of trying to figure out, where do I put bathrooms in this house where there were no bathrooms? A lot of people like to put additions onto these historic homes.
Yep.
To get those, you know, to get that master suite with the bathroom and the laundry room, and it makes it easier to run a all those mechanicals. It's a big house already. I don't want any more square footage than it already has. Yeah. I don't want to go through designing a giant addition to this home. So we're not doing any additions onto the exterior. So I'm trying to rework the upstairs, but without taking out any walls. Right. These walls are solid brick. I mean, they are 14 inches thick brick. Right. The whole house is brick, solid, solid brick. There's like one spot I'm cutting a doorway into one of the walls, you know, in these very large upstairs bedrooms, we will be placing bathrooms in those bedrooms, you know, and building those out with stud walls. I'm not going in with, we're not having our mason like create new brick walls or anything. That'd be crazy. Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
What is your end goal for completion? There's outbuildings on the property. Like, tell us how you envision this property coming together.
So it all depends on energy and finances and all these things of like, what will be the final? Nobody will know. But we have our hopes and dreams. And what the dream is that, you know, we restore the home, we make it so that we can live there and that our families can, you know, come stay with us. We do have a small brick structure just off the back of the house that people have had different opinions on whether it was a summer kitchen, whether it was just used for, you know, as an office. This home, this property was originally a slave owning plantation. And what I can see is that I can see the foundations of other building structures that I assume were for enslaved quarters. And I call that outbuilding an enslaved quarters. It's a nice one, I can't say nice, but nicer than most of them were wood structures. And so they don't exist anymore because they weren't built to last. They weren't built well, right? So this one still stands. So we will be restoring that again, no additions, no big changes on that structure. That structure historically is extremely important and very important to me to get right. And so I hope to just restore it because it's falling down. It needs a lot of work. We have a historic barn, a hay barn on the property that I hope to restore, but that is a massive undertaking. And that's far off into the future. We have historic terrace gardens, kind of like Monticello.
Oh, wow.
We're coming over,
by the way, when it's done. Just letting you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I love people coming out and getting to walk around. But, you know, we plan on having plantings, maybe orchards. My oldest is obsessed with flower gardens. So maybe a flower farm situation happening. We'd like to have a guest house, a new built guest house within those terrace gardens. And we've already finished the shop. You've probably seen that on social media.
A wood shop to help support all of the building that's going on property?
Yes. So my husband is a hobby carpenter.
Yeah.
I like to design the furniture that I want and then he builds it for me. Yeah. So that's part of it. Like even if we didn't have a lot of work to do on the house, we would want to have a wood shop for ourselves. We had one in Atlanta, but we're trying to get it really organized because our contractor and our subcontractors will be using the shop we have so much exterior woodwork that's going to be getting restored this summer. So we need to have it ready for them to use because they'll be using it for the work that's happening on the house too. So but so big, big dreams for the property. I hope we get to it all. Things have to be approved. The land is also protected. It's under a easement, agricultural easement with the Virginia Outdoor Federation. And so there's everything that we do to the land and the property has to be approved by them as well. So they have a lot of opinions on us building a guest house because technically they say no new structures are allowed anywhere on the property. I'm working with them as long as it's small enough and it looks appropriate for the property, then they're willing to work with me on it. So
you'd get benefits if you, because you're agricultural, like if you got donkeys.
Yes. So we have a lot of locals in the area are like, well, when are you getting the animals?
Right.
That's a tax write-off. Yeah. I'm like, okay. One thing at a time. So the VOF wants anything that we build to be, I don't want to say historically accurate, but to fit stylistically with the other buildings, which is funny because the Department of Historic Resources is the opposite. And they want anything new that we do to be on the more modern side. They don't want you to be tricking the eye as to what is historic and what is not. They want it to be clear as to what was original and what is new. So it's always a balance between making everyone happy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, yeah, I still think that this would be a TV show.
Oh, gosh.
Come on. Why is this not on TV, Restoring Red Hill? It even has a catchy name.
Such a great name.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my husband and I are probably too much of potty mouths to be.
That would make it even better. I'd watch that.
I've had people reach out to me wanting me to write a book. I don't know. We'll see. I have this that I work on. I work for a design firm in Lynchburg, actually, as well, just part-time. I have the kids. I have a lot of doctor's appointments because I have a lot of health issues that I juggle with everything. So yeah, it's a lot, but case in point, like I said earlier, we don't really know what it is to slow down, but we're trying. trying to take it easy.
I think it's really important that this place be able to heal you and give you that peace and knowing its history. There were people enslaved on the property. Yes. I think that, may I be so bold as to say that you need a facilitator to bless the space.
Yeah, it is a very sacred space. I hope to do right by it and to listen more than I talk, because these plantation homes, I remember in my kind of teens and early 20s going to weddings. You know, I'm not originally from the South. I always found it odd when I would go to weddings at plantation homes. It felt off to me. Mm-hmm. People were just like, oh, isn't this a pretty house? And I'm like, but there's so much. To me, it's a somber feeling that I get when I'm at these places. And I feel that at Red Hill. It gives me peace, but it still feels somber, as it should. And I think, you know, people of color have reached out to me and say, thank you for bringing this up, because these places are not places of just beauty and joy for us. We have to remember that. And even before this was a plantation, this was land owned by the Monica Nation, which is still an active Native American tribe in my area.
Wow.
These are things that we have to talk about and acknowledge and hold space for. But it is a beautiful part of the country, and it is very healing for me. And we were looking for that. We were looking to leave, as much as I love parts of the city life, everything was just too fast. We were stretched to the max. It was too much. Spending less and less time with our kids. You start delegating everything out. You have help for the house. You have a nanny. You have this, you have that. Because you just don't have time for any of it. You're working so much. And we are really trying to get away from that. So even with all of this work on this house, we try to take it slow, do it right. We remind each other, hey, we're not going to stress about this. We didn't pick Red Hill to go fast and for it to be a stressful project. Because you guys, I'm sure you know at this point, being homeowners, that renovating, doing any renovations, or if you have a new home built or even just buying a house, it can be super stressful. So we try to keep that in mind, that this is a project of love, you know, and to keep it, you know, and it's also a place of privilege to own this land and this home, and to, you know, practice gratitude for getting to do this work, that, you know, don't get too lost in the trees.
It's so nice that you don't have a specific schedule. That must be so freeing to just be able to go and let things happen and evolve.
Yeah. And that's another privilege we have, that we're able to not live there. You know, you'll see a lot of old home social media pages. And a lot of those people are living through that construction. I will say I don't see as many people with young children living through that construction. I feel very lucky to be able to leave it at the end of the night and go rest my head on a pillow, not in a construction site, and get to come to it fresh in the morning.
I'm sorry if you said this in the beginning because my headphones were acting up funny, but on Instagram, in some of the rooms, it looks like, I mean, there's, I think it was the kitchen or the dining room, there's like a painting, there's this gorgeous mirror like with a bench, which, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. So all of those, there's that like love seat, were all of those items left there? So when you bought it, oh my gosh, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
And there was, what I've been told is that, so the family that we purchased it from, those were not their belongings. Those were the belongings of the farmer that owned it before. He held on to everything, absolutely everything. And he also loved old things and antiques. The bench actually predates him. That came in the 1930s, the one in the hall with the grand mirror on it. And that was I was told that was an antique.
I mean, that is stunning.
Yeah, it was an antique in the 1930s when it was brought to Red Hill. The rest of it was there. When we bought it, there was even more stuff. And that family, so not the family that we purchased from, but the family that that family purchased from, actually came back and wanted some of their, essentially, this man's grandfather. He wanted some of his things, all of this man's farming journals, like for every year that he owned this property, there were stacks of them. And so there were some things that were very sentimental to them, that they had kept stored there. And of course, we let them come in and take what was sentimental to them. Obviously, like some things like the two mirrors, I had that in the contract. I was like, that has to stay.
Smart. So
that's
smart.
Not going anywhere. Everything else, you know, I won't cry over, but lots of books. And I'm a book hoarder. I love books.
Me too.
And like, I have this one here. This is one. So our house has a tie-in with Edgar Allan Poe. The money that was basically the money that made it possible to build this house came from the Ellison Allen Company, which was a mercantile business in Richmond, mostly in Richmond. They sold in London. They sold in different parts of Virginia, but Ellis is the original family that built Red Hill, and Allen is Edgar Allan Poe's adoptive father.
Wow.
So we have been told that we know his stepfather, adoptive father, came to Red Hill. That's undocumented. I haven't been able to find a primary resource on placing Edgar Allan Poe at our home, but most anecdotal things that you'll read about our house say that, like, Edgar Allan Poe grew up coming here, and everyone locally kind of knows it as the house that Edgar Allan Poe vacationed at as a child. But I haven't been able to find a primary resource on that. And coming from education, I'm like, I need to not see it on paper first. But this is one of the books that was left there, Southern Prose and Poetry. And this has Edgar Allan Poe poems in it. So it's, yeah. I just love this stuff. There was some published in 1910, but I have stacks of things that I've saved from the house.
Can you read the letter that you found in the house?
Oh, yes. When we came to first visit the house, my husband and I think he had come to Virginia once, you know, in his 20s for something. I had never been to the state of Virginia. So we were coming to this property wanting to buy land and to find something old to work on and to find our, you know, place of respite and peace. And I found this property and we couldn't shake it. We couldn't stop looking at it. We couldn't get over it. And finally my amazing in-laws were like, you know what, we'll take the kids this weekend. It's a long weekend. Just go up. It was the fall. They're like, you know, if anything, you get to go hang out in the Blue Ridge Parkway area in the fall and, you know, you can have a little getaway. And we went to go see the house, and our front yard view is of the Blue Ridge Mountains, and it was fall, so it was just lit up in color, and some of the cows had gotten out from the other farm, so there's like cows roaming the property, and it was just so idyllic and so beautiful. And my husband and I didn't speak a word to each other the whole time. We were just in awe. And we kind of were, before we were at the property, we were driving, and my husband said, "I hope this place sucks. Or else we're going to buy it." And it did not suck. And then I walked in the house and I found this poem that just was, it was a sign. It was definitely a sign. And it says it was written by a woman in her 80s named Nadine Stair, but people have said like that's a pen name, or it's been translated from Spanish. So the origins are unknown at this point, but it is an old poem and it's beautiful. It says, "If I had my life to live over, I'd dare to make more mistakes next time. I'd relax. I would limber up. I would be sillier than I have been this trip. I would take fewer things seriously. I would take more chances. I would climb more mountains and swim more rivers. I would eat more ice cream and less beans. I would perhaps have more actual troubles, but I'd have fewer imaginary ones. You see, I'm one of those people who lived sensibly and sanely hour after hour, day after day. Oh, I've had my moments. And if I had to do it over again, I'd have more of them. In fact, I'd try to have nothing else, just moments, one after another, instead of living so many years ahead of each day. I've been one of those persons who never goes anywhere without a thermometer, a hot water bottle, a raincoat, and a parachute. If I had to do it again, I would travel lighter than I have. If I had my life to live over, I would start barefoot earlier in the spring and stay that way later in the fall. I would go to more dances. I would ride more merry-go-rounds. I would pick more daisies."
Wow.
Isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
"I would have more actual troubles and less imaginary ones." That's the line for me.
Yeah. And that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So does the house feel somber to you?
It does. I'm more of an introspective person already, but when I'm there, it feels like peacefulness and gratitude, but I never forget what it took for that house to be built. There are fingerprints in the bricks of our home of the people who were enslaved that made those bricks by hand, by the clay.
Wow.
That the house sits on. And the thought of, you know, King George in England sends a letter to Charles Ellis saying, "Hey, thanks for your service in the war. Here's a tract of land that we looked at a map and said, sure, you can have that." And it wasn't theirs to give. And so there's a lot of suffering that's happened for us to be able to have this beautiful home. And I don't know, but it makes the house feel more, I have more love for it because I feel like I am the keeper right now of it, right? Like it's such an important property and I am just its steward for our time while we're there, and I want to do right by it. So
it's a house of hope.
House of hope. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much land do you have?
40 acres.
You're going to hay it, right?
God, I don't know. It's a hell of a lot more than what I wanted.
Someone will come in and pay you to hay it. It's a source of income.
Yeah, I need to. Our wonderful neighbors who own all the property surrounding us, they run a cattle farm.
Yeah.
And they grow corn and things just to, you know, feed the cattle. But it's mostly a beef cattle farm. And they help us out a lot. we still let the cows graze most of the property. You know, land management is a whole thing. And even though I grew up in Wisconsin, I don't know anything about land management or running a farm, or we definitely need help. And we definitely, I've thought about that.
Horse hay, not cow hay. Horse hay is more expensive.
Horse hay. This is good to know. My kids really want us to give them horses on this property. And I'm like, yeah, making no promises.
When that time comes, I don't know if you listened to the All Seated in a Barn, but you could rescue.
Yeah.
I haven't listened to that particular episode yet, but I do follow her now.
Yeah. That would be a beautiful way to heal the land also.
Yeah. I think whatever we do on this property has to be in the name of healing, you know? Yeah. And donkeys, I've been told, are great
protectors,
like guardian protector animals.
Yes.
So, and they're pretty hardy.
Yeah.
So I am definitely thinking about donkeys, because I haven't seen the coyotes, or coyotes as they call them out there, or the black bears, but they're out there. I know that we've got a lot of wildlife out there. So
do you have a dog?
I do, but I'm more concerned that he's going to sniff a snake and get bit. And he is scared of his own shadow. He's not a guard dog. He's sweet as pie, but we do have a lot of snakes out there. Okay. So black snakes. I haven't seen any copperheads or anything yet, so it should be good. But they are there.
I don't like snakes.
Yeah.
No, neither do I. But we also have rodent problems. So
of course you
I'm
do.
I'm kind of like, thank you for your service. Stay away from me.
Yeah. What other things have you found on the property?
Oh gosh. I love going treasure hunting, as I call it. I have a metal detector that my husband got me for Mother's Day. I have no idea I don't know how to use it. And he refuses to teach me how to use it. He is a software engineer, so he's super tech nerdy. And he's like, nope. You wanted a metal detector, you're going to have to figure it out on your own. So I don't use it. I just walk around and use my eyes. But I find stuff every single time. If it's rained, if we've had a heavy rain, I will be out in the fields looking. And I find a lot of really old handmade nails. I find lots of pieces of pottery and glass bottles. I actually found, when they were trenching for the septic system that we put in last summer, that, you know, that's a very deep trench. So I literally, they were like, as they were excavating with the digger, I jumped in the hole they were excavating. And I think I gave them a heart attack. And they're like, lady, what are you doing? I'm like, well, you're going that way. I'll just stay over here. Like, no worries. I had to have my husband throw a ladder in so I could get out of the hole.
Oh my gosh.
But I found a witch's bottle, which is a little... Yeah, it's a little talisman bottle that they would put nails in, you know, pointy side up, and they would put urine in it, and then they would bury it in the ground. And that was supposed to protect your home, your place from bad spirits.
Uh-oh.
Or from bad luck. I dug it up.
I'm going to have to Google that later. I'm curious why urine and whose urine. Does that matter?
Right.
Male or female?
Right.
Assuming female. I'm assuming women were the ones doing this, but not many have been found. I think the Virginia Department of Transportation was doing a new road or something out in, you know, closer to DC. And since they were digging, I think archaeology for the DHR came out and we're like, oh, you're digging? Do you mind if we like take a peek around while you're digging all this earth up? And they found one. They found a witch's bottle. So, and that was big news, because there's just not many are found. I think sometimes they find them in Pennsylvania more than Virginia. But I remember reading that article before I had even bought Red Hill. And so when I unearth this bottle, and I never find whole pieces, everything is just little broken pieces. I pulled this bottle out and I knew what it was. And my contractor was like, how the hell do you know what that is? How do you know about a witch's bottle?
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. I haven't found any human remains. Luckily, people ask me that all the time. There was the Ellis family was, they had their family cemetery there. And thankfully for me in the 1970s, they reinterred the whole family in the local cemetery. So
that's good.
Yeah. every time we dig, people are like, oh, they get nervous.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to find down here?
What do you do with all of the items that you find?
I wish I was more organized with it. I am always, if I'm out in the field, it is without fail. The kids are going to start arguing with each other, or someone's going to need something, or they hurt themselves or something. So they'll come out in the field screaming. So then I'm like, I shove it in my pocket, or I run up to the porch and I put stuff. So I have piles of this stuff everywhere. Like I have just here, this is some of my first stuff that I found that I keep at my desk. This one I found recently. I haven't even posted this, so you guys will get to see this. I was super excited about this.
Take a screenshot, Lauren. We want to see your beautiful face, though. Scoot it to the side. Yeah.
Well, that's, is that China? That piece of China?
It's called transferware. It's from the early 1900s. I love that it has apple blossom flowers on it because they did have apple orchards on the property. And there's actually, I never get the actual stamp so I can look up the pottery.
Yeah.
And it was a big enough piece. So I looked it up and I actually bought some plates.
Yay.
Yeah. Some antique plates with this pattern on it. Cause I've only found one Native American arrowhead. So that was deep in the trench. That was when they were trenching for the septic system. But yeah, I will eventually get organized with it and clean it all.
Yep.
I find most of the owners of our property have served in the army, like in every war, historical war that we've had, they've served. So I find a lot of military uniform pieces, buttons, and things like that. I have a massive pile of that. People try to get me to sell them that stuff. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
So we are doing, I think this summer in May, there's a, I hope I get this right. We're located in Amherst County. So that there's an Amherst historical little museum. And they reached out to me like a month ago asking if they're doing like a tour of historical sites of Amherst County and the area. And they want the last stop to be Red Hill. So I'll be giving a tour of the property. That'll be the first like official tour that I give. But that's another thing. People reach out to me and are like, can you please just like put events together, like to like charge, like sell tickets to give tours and stuff. That, I don't know. That also doesn't feel right to me, but I think about that of like, should I be, I don't know. Really just out of like wanting to be kind. I don't really want tons of strangers walking through my space and like what feels like home. And we've had a lot of people just show up, which is really unnerving.
Yeah.
Like I'll be out playing with my kids and like trucks just start pulling in. People like hop out of their car.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I had one guy, if the gate's open, people come on in. And we have cameras everywhere. It happens when we're there and when we're not there sometimes. I don't even know how they're getting into the property. So that coming from the city, you don't walk on someone's property. So it's
been,
it's a big adjustment learning like country life and the etiquette of that and the different societal norms in small rural communities versus being in the city. It's very different, very different.
Yeah, I mean, there's a fine line between you sharing the very respectful restoration and with the world and the thousands of followers, and then being disrespected by people feeling like it's their right to be part of it.
Yes, it does feel that is hard. It is crossing a line to me, and I haven't found the right words to post about that. I find I find social media in general and sharing personal information tricky. Like I don't talk about my kids, or I make sure that they're not in any pictures or videos. It just doesn't feel right to me. I just kind of go by feel, because none of this is like, you know, I don't actually know how to do social media. So
that's the best way.
Yeah, that is the best
way. Right? Is it the best way? Like I could get tips, because I'm always, and sometimes there's things that I want to post about, but I'm like, I haven't found the right words yet. But I think part of it, I like in some of your podcast episodes, you guys talk about just like being true to yourself, F being likable. And, you know, I'm trying to do more of that.
It's hard, but liberating at the same time.
Yeah. 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 Coming from the Midwest, it's very hard. Midwest nice is a thing. So, but my
trainer was from the Midwest.
Oh, yeah. Yes, you know, being from Wisconsin, like we just, every other word is a curse word, which in the South got me in a little more trouble. You know, I was maybe deemed less ladylike when I first moved, at least in Georgia. Virginia has been a fun mix between our bordering, you know, North and South. So it's this interesting mix. It's very different than the Carolinas or Georgia, Alabama, and all those other Southeast states.
Is there anything in particular that you feel, besides your family, of course, that really makes a home? Like, are you someone where if you travel, you bring, you know, I know people that bring like a candle with them, or they'll travel with, you know, some pictures and kind of set up frames in the hotel room or anything like that. What kind of makes a home to you, aside from your family?
That is a very interesting question. I don't do that when I travel. But I have a lot of feelings on that in terms of design, whether it's designing something for a client or for myself. And I think as far as interior design goes, my ethos is I like it to be collected. And I like things that have a story to them. Mm-hmm. I like things with patina and texture that reminds me of something, even if it's just like, oh yeah, I remember that trip to that really cool, you know, vintage shop or antique store or whatever. I like found things, and that's whether it looks good or makes sense to anyone else. I try my hardest not to care about what other people think of the aesthetics of the interior of my home, because it's for my joy. And I want someone to walk in and be like, yeah, this is Melissa, you know, this is Mel and Fed, like this is their stuff. And, you know, I'd like to have things from Argentina where he's from, you know, where we've had other, at least other Hispanics walk into our house and go, oh, who's from Argentina? Mm-hmm. You know, that's special to me. Moving the kids from the only home they'd ever lived in Atlanta was hard. And even when we were, you know, I was trying to be ruthless in what I brought. At the same time, there were things that maybe like the crappy nightstands I had in their bedroom that had like dings and marker stains and stuff on them that I definitely could have just gotten rid of. I kept because I wanted, when we landed in Virginia, to put their room back together. It was their things, and I wanted them to feel like, when I put there, it was like, this is my bed, and this is my nightstand, this is my bookcase, and this is my things, and this is, you know, and I immediately got their rooms. So that's another thing. When we moved and we landed, their bedrooms were the very first thing I did. It was very important to me. I used to teach elementary, middle school, and I know how important it is for kids to have routine and to feel settled, and it'll be the same at Red Hill. I put more effort and thought and care into their spaces probably than anything else. But yeah, I don't know if that answers your question. But
no, I love it.
That's what makes home to me, aside from my family. There are times the words flow, and, mm-hmm. you know, in the beginning of starting the social media pages, I had more time and I was at the computer all the time because I was finishing up my master's degree. and I was doing a lot of research for my last project. So I was at the computer. It was all fresh in my mind, and I had the time to sit down and just write. And I don't have that time now. So I find it harder to get to sit down at the computer and to chunk out that time to update everyone. And there's so much to talk about. There's so much to talk about. We could do a million of these episodes, you know?
That's what captivated me was your storytelling and how thoughtful you were about the property and the renovation process itself. This is such a beautiful story. We need to help share this story with our listeners.
I appreciate it.
Do you want to start, Lauren, talking about some of our classic questions that she has? We have some new ones, and but they tie in beautifully.
I'm a little nervous.
You've already answered them in your own way.
I'm trying to find them. I took a picture so I would have them, and of course.
Oh, I know. It's always like, where are they in my notes? Depending on the week. Do you want me to start?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. What are you no longer available for?
Oh, gosh. Spending my precious time, my little free time that I have with people that don't fill my cup. Mm-hmm. As you get older, you have to edit your life, and you have to edit the people in it. And that can be hard. Some people are just in your life for chapters. Sometimes that's hard to do. It's hard to do, but it's important to do.
I love that. Sometimes people are just in your life for chapters. That is very profound and very accurate, but it's a great way to put it. Do you have an anthem or a song that always gets you going?
Anything Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, yeah. I love Fleetwood Mac. Stevie Nicks is my soul sister. I think I would fall down if I met her.
Oh my gosh. I am a super fan. I've seen them in concert so many times. I had two cats before they've passed, but one was Stevie Nicks and one was Mick Fleetwood. So everyone in my life knows my love for Fleetwood Mac.
Good choice.
Yes. What is your most treasured personal ritual?
Oh, wow. I'd say I have two in my day. Fede is a total coffee snob, and he makes me the most delicious cappuccino every morning.
Oh,
and we sit. And if it's nice out, we sit outside with our coffees, sometimes in silence, sometimes talking about the day, you know, but that is a constant. And that is important to us, even when we would go to the property, because, you know, we have an RV on property so that we have a toilet, you know, things of running water.
Important.
And we will bring our big espresso machine to the RV just so that it's like, got to have our coffee. And I love that, like, I'm just realizing now that I have a ritual that starts the day and I have a ritual that ends the day. And like, ending the day is, it used to be reading to my kids, and now they're learning to read. So now they're reading to us, which is like,
no,
a joy I can't even describe. Oh God, how quickly, I'm going to get about it, how quickly that comes full circle, or you're reading to them and then all of a sudden, you know, they start reading to you. You're like, this is wild.
It really
is. That's how I start in my day every day.
That's so nice. What is your latest luxury for your soul?
I was thinking about this last night in anticipation of this. Giving myself moments where I have absolutely nothing to do and let myself have that. A time of nothingness is my favorite thing.
Yeah.
And really good coffee. Like, mm-hmm. really good coffee beans. We don't skimp on the coffee beans in this house.
What kind of beans?
Oh, I let Fede do that. He's so much more, he can go down some serious rabbit holes. I say that. I also clearly go down rabbit holes. But coffee is one of them for him. And so he picks the beans, but we try to, usually we're only buying beans, South America and sometimes Ethiopian.
Mm-hmm. this question we usually ask at the top, but I'll ask it here. What are you reading, watching, or listening to right now?
Well, you've caught me at a good time because it's spring break and my kids are back in Atlanta with grandparents. We never watch anything unless it's like sitting on the couch while our kids watch Bluey. and then I'll sit down and watch that with them. But we're not big movie or TV watchers. But this week I did start watching Life and Beth with Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I will say I cannot watch anything. If it's going to be serious, somber, sad, scary, like that, then it's going to be, I'm learning, it's like a documentary. I can't do movies and shows that are depressing.
Yeah.
Because life is too much of that already.
Yeah.
I just need very light, funny stuff if I'm going to sit down and watch it. So that's that. Reading, I'm so happy to share this book. Sleeping with the Ancestors. This came out recently.
Yeah.
By Joseph McGill Jr. and Herb Fraser. And he chronicle their time actually sleeping in enslaved dwellings and what that's like. And his writing is beautiful and like keeps you interested. It's not just like a history read that's going to be boring. So I highly recommend this book. I really, really want him to come out to our property and to tell me what he thinks, if he thinks our outbuilding is an enslaved dwelling or not, since he's seen so many of them. So that's what I'm reading, listening to. In Atlanta, I listen to a lot more podcasts. I haven't since we've moved. So if I'm listening to something, it's always music. And I kind of go by decade. I'll have a day where I'm super into my 90s music, a day where I'm into 80s music, horrible, awful early 2000s music. But that's if I'm like working out or going for a run or stuff from like the 50s or 60s or 70s. It's just, I pick a decade for the day and I go with it. So
I love that.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Or a language. I love music in other languages too. Sometimes to focus, it's great to not understand what they're saying.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
That's it.
What does it mean to you to have a well-lived life?
Obviously, I knew this question was coming, but that's such a nuanced question. It's so hard to answer. I thought about this a lot yesterday. And for me, I have had recent scares of where I'm kind of looking at my life and am I living it well, right? So that's been on my mind a lot this year. And I think for me, I have anxiety. So I'm always searching for peace. If I can find peace within myself, then I'm living well. I have found my true north, or whatever you want to call it. You know, I'm listening to my inner self if I have found peace. I think living with purpose gives you a well-lived life. And it's not like you have to have one purpose. I don't believe in that at all. Just being awake, not getting into the monotony of things and letting your days pass. And then just leaving the world a better place is a third part of it. Find your peace, mostly do things for yourself and what you want to do, but also think of your community, think of others. I don't think people are thinking about that enough these days. So
that's a great answer.
It's lengthy. It's wordy.
It's a hard question.
It's a hard question and it's nuanced and I can't answer it with like a sentence. It's just like, yeah. And maybe that'll change as I get older. We'll see. We'll see.
Where can people follow this journey and learn all about restoring Red Hill?
So right now I mostly am on Facebook and Instagram as Restoring Red Hill. I think I might be moving more towards YouTube. Videos, episodes, it's quicker and easier. I have a YouTube page. I think it's called Restoring Red Hill. I think it's only got two videos on it. It is a lot quicker. It's a quicker way to update on a lot of information, I'm realizing, than having to wait till the end of the day to edit photos and crank out words and all that. So
yeah,
TBD.
Perfect. I hope you'll come back on and give us an update when you move into the home.
Oh yeah. Well, you guys have to come out before it's move-in ready. The best part is seeing it in its glory right now. So that's a long ass drive.
If any of our conversation resonated with you, feel free to reach out via email at info@luxuriesforyoursoul.com.
We would love it if you showed your support for the show with a 5-star review or a social media share so more people find these conversations and have the opportunity to hear from our guests.
Also, there are several ways to connect with us outside of the podcast. If you are searching for a personal power object, a good luck charm, or a talisman to shield yourself, I've got you covered.
If you have a small business or incubating an idea, you can work with me one-on-one for my consulting service. When it comes to design, branding, marketing, and consistency, we all have our blind spots. Yet sometimes we want someone to listen to our ideas or share valuable insights. Contact me if you would benefit from a fresh set of eyes or a brainstorming partner.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button to continue receiving all the luxuries for your soul.